Scary Home Companion is sponsored by Totally Tidy LLC. A female-owned business, Totally Tidy specializes in cleaning homes above the industry standard. They are raising the bar. Get clean with Totally Tidy. Currently looking for employees in southern Indiana. If you are in the area of Evansville and Newburgh, contact Totally Tidy today. TOTTIDY@hotmail.com and on Facebook as Totally Tidy LLC. Tanis Cray was raised by her father Matthias on the Mohawk Reservation in northern New York. A former pro wrestler, Matthias did his best to care for his daughter and to protect her. The Cray family had a long history of being protectors, spiritual guardians for their tribe. In 2005, the demons came home to roost. Oregon Cray, the adult nephew to Matthias and cousin to Tanis, returned to the family home when he was haunted by a living nightmare called the Long Black Veil. The Veil was one of the ghastly ones, the sadistic creatures that prowl the dreamscape. With the help of his family, Oregon was able to save his soul and to kill the Long Black Veil. This story was first recounted in the episode How to Murder a Ghastly One. It was that experience that compelled Tanis for the rest of her life. She began studying journalism, and not the normal kind with man-on-the-street interviews and recipes for Grandma Ruth's banana bread. This was the fringe kind, the Dahlia Red kind, digging into the shadows and exposing secrets. In 2013, Tanis's pursuit for the darkest truths led her to the Slate County Correctional Facility. She was working on a documentary. She and her friends broke into this infamous abandoned prison where they found untold horrors waiting for them on death row. This story was first told in The Secret of Cell 6. Tanis was lucky enough to escape with her life that night, but her sanity was not as fortunate. Tanis was put into a psychiatric facility for quite some time, in and out of catatonia. Whatever she had seen in Cell 6 had damaged her mind. And then one night, she escaped. Tanis had become possessed by the idea that she had to find the priest with red hands. After a brief but eventful search, one that was chronicled in detail by my colleague Mary Ann Simpson in her episode called Chasing Ghosts, Tanis Cray disappeared. In 2016, Tanis reappeared at the side of the priest with red hands. When confronted by her cousin Oregon, bang bang, Tanis shot him down. She left Oregon to be mutilated and disfigured by a woman with a split mouth. And then Tanis disappeared again. You can get more details about this story in the episode Apex Predators. And I know that thus far this feels like a history lecture, but it's all important. It informs this story, the path of Tanis Cray, and what has led her here to be bound and shackled and locked in a cell, forced to face the very people she betrayed and hurt. The when is 2018. The where is the paramilitary compound on the Florida estate of Lila Ambrose. The who is a fractured family. The why, that remains to be seen. This is the Piranha Solution. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem. Killers, cannibals, and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact. Tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. Sunrise, over a Quonset hut. There were two heavily armed men at the door, under strict orders and wearing full riot gear, with a dozen more identical soldiers in a tight cordon surrounding the building. Unseen and scattered all around were snipers, watching the building through rifle scopes. Sadie Jane was running the comm systems from another building about 100 yards away. Her voice, and her voice alone, was in the ears of all the troops. Anyone trying to go in or out of that hut without Sadie's say-so was to be dropped on sight with no questions and no hesitation. Cordelia May was the walking boss. She kept her eyes and ears on the eyes and ears. She had to make sure everyone did their job to keep the prisoner in that hut secure. The structure was designed specifically to be a holding tank for the more dangerous kind of prisoner. It was comprised of two rooms, the small front room containing a desk and several monitors and speakers, which was a listening post to keep an eye on the other room. This was a substantially larger room, big enough so that the freestanding cage in the center of it touched neither wall nor ceiling. The rest of the room was empty. The building had been only used sparingly because Lila Ambrose was not fond of taking prisoners. But this was a different story. This was a unique situation. Tanis Cray was a different story. She was a unique situation. After Victoria Bondurant had led the executions of Lila's private dream guardians, the old woman had reached out to Matthias Cray. He made her a deal. He would take the job and help train her mind for what was to come, but he needed Tanis back. He wanted her found and brought alive to him. Matthias was well aware that there were at least two people who had survived a brain slug and had returned to some semblance of a normal life. All he wanted was a chance to save his daughter. If Lila could give him that, he would serve her faithfully for the rest of her days. It had taken months, but Lila's people finally found Tanis. Sadie Jane had organized the deception of Oregon Cray. All parties involved felt it was for the best if Oregon wasn't told ahead of time. He didn't share his uncle's faith that Tanis could be recovered. After what Oregon had seen from her, after what he had seen in her eyes, he knew that the girl he loved was gone forever. By the time Oregon and Jack returned from their job, Tanis was secure in that cage, and Matthias was waiting for Oregon in the driveway. The two men went nose to nose before they hugged. "I love you, Uncle. I love you too, Nephew," This isn't going to play out like you think. I saved you. I can save her. That was different. And you know it. They saved Sadie. They saved Keyshawn. It can be done. Oregon looked away. That was different too. They didn't want this to happen to them. It was forced on them. Tanis chose it. But she was, yeah, I know. She was wild. She went crazy. But she still chose it, Unc. She went looking for it. She found it. She gave herself to it. That makes it different. He hugged Matthias again. I'm giving you a little time to sit with this. But not a lot. I don't like her being here for a few different reasons. There's a part of me that thinks if Tanis got found after all this time, it was because she wanted to get found. And that's not good. You have 24 hours. I'll be watching and listening, but you have my word, I won't interfere. Not for 24 hours. At that point, you will have either convinced me that we can help her, or I'm going to do the merciful thing and put her down. He went inside the house to shower and change out of his bloody clothes. 30 minutes later, Oregon was in the front room of that Quonset hut, watching his baby cousin Tanis over the monitors. Matthias was sitting in a chair outside the cell. Manny Cortez was sitting in a similar chair, just behind Oregon, watching on quietly. "Hey, man," Manny said to his partner. "I just wanted to say..." Oregon raised his hand. "Another time. For the next 24 hours, I don't want you to talk to me, Manny. Yeah, but not a word." Manny nodded and settled back in his seat. Together, they watched the show. Tanis and Matthias Cray were only 10 feet apart, but the distance between them was infinite. "You used to have such pretty eyes," he said to his daughter. She still looked a little like her mother, despite all her changes. Tanis was thin now, too thin, her hair scraggly and tangled. She was missing part of one ear, and her left index finger. Whenever she moved and her clothes shifted, Matthias caught sight of a new and different scar. And her eyes, so ugly green, not like his baby girl at all. "It's good to see you, Pop," she said, with a winsome smile. "I missed you so much, baby girl. I wish it was you I was talking to now."
"What do you mean, Daddy?"
"I mean, you haven't called me Daddy in years. You're doing it now, but it's not genuine. Listen, is it possible to just cut through the bullshit? Look at this." Matthias removed a small remote control from the breast pocket of his flannel shirt. "On top of your cage, there's a flat metal box. Don't bother feeling around up there. You can't reach it, and even if you could, you can't damage it. If I press this button right here, That metal box will emit a pulse. I'm not a scientist. I don't understand how it works, but that pulse will melt and destroy the thing that's inside you. And it's important that you understand I am willing to do it because I don't believe you are my Tanis. Whatever that thing is in your head, that's what's pulling the strings. I'll press the button because I know I won't be murdering my baby girl. I'll be destroying the thing in her. And although I know that Tanis will die from that, it doesn't matter. Because as far as I can see, she's already gone. So tell me, do you believe me? Will I press the button? Tanis replied, "You went through so much trouble to catch me and bring me here. Just for that?" "No," he said, with the deepest sadness. "It's because I needed to look in your eyes first. I needed to see if you were still in there." "I'm still your girl, Pop. Always your girl. Remember the first time you taught me to ride a horse? You held the lead and we went through the Flint Hill woods. There was still old snow on the branches and the trees, and you reached up and smacked the branches when you walked under them so the snow fell on my head. Remember how I tried to be so mad, but then you laughed and then I laughed?" Her voice was soft, but the emotional violence was deafening. Precise blows to where they would hurt a father the most. "God damn it. Yes, I remember that." He put the remote back in his pocket. "Why are you here, Tanis?" "They caught me," she said. "Sadie and Manny, they brought me here." He shook his head. "No, no. I need something real. Why are you here? Not how, but why?" She looked away. She scratched her scalp with 9 fingers. She hissed and muttered to herself. When she looked back, her grisly, ghastly green eyes were damp with unshed tears. "Because I wanted to talk to you, Pop. They were going to kill you like they did to Megumi and Jezara. But I said there was a better way. I said I could talk to you and that you would listen to me. You always said our family was strong. I never knew how strong. This isn't your fight. I begged them to let me talk to you so I could convince you to step away. It's the only way that I could save you and the rest of the family." Matthias folded his arms and leaned forward. His heel brushed against the leather satchel sitting under his chair. "You're coming after the whole family?" he asked. "No, it's not like that. It's just part of the Piranha solution. It's pure chaos. But yes, it will affect the family, the whole family, the entire bloodline. It might get wiped out as if it never was." The music was Tanis's voice, but the notes were being played by something dark and corrupt. "I want to give you something of value, Pop. I can tell you what's about to happen. About what's already happening, but your people, they haven't pieced it together yet. The idea came from Victoria. She's been planning it for a while. She calls it the Piranha Solution. And it's not just for you. It's for everyone. I see the cameras, so I know people are listening. Sadie, are you there? They said to say hi. And Lila, Lila, always the bridesmaid. I'm supposed to tell all of you this because it's already too late for you to stop it.
The end is coming. Fast. And the only thing I ask is, when I tell you this, that you and I can have a word in private.
I don't think that's possible, he said softly. We both know that it is. The implication of that hung there for a moment. What is the piranha solution?
They grow weary of trying to kill Lila. She's been such a thorn in our side, but always escapes us. Them, always escapes them. It's like she's surrounded by so many layers of armor, they just can't get through to her. The piranha solution is a kind of acid. It eats everything away, slowly but surely, until there's nothing left. So if they cannot pierce the armor, then they can coat it with acid and slowly eat away at it, starting at the edges, one layer at a time, until there's no protection left. Lila hides behind Sadie and Jack, but they hide behind Cordelia and Mona and Manny and Oregon. They hide behind guards and soldiers and snipers and killers and doctors and chefs and accountants and all kinds of people. Victoria knows the names and information for everyone worth knowing. So they started to work around the edges, you see, finding the weakest spots in the smallest pieces of the armor, dissolving them. All it takes is one weak link, and the entire chain is compromised. Take, for example, a perimeter guard who works right here in Lila's compound. This man is fiercely loyal to Lila, always has been. He would never betray her. But what if he came home from work one day and he found that his wife and his daughter were missing? What if there was only a hand left behind, the severed hand of his wife still wearing her wedding ring? This man would call for help, but the phone is already ringing. "Help, Daddy, help me," his daughter says from somewhere far away, somewhere he could never find her. And now there's a man on the line who says that if this guard, who is so fiercely loyal to Lila Ambrose, if he doesn't do as he is told, then his precious 4-year-old daughter will be. Well, I don't want to say it. What might this man do to save her? Do you think he would turn off a fence? Would he give away secrets? Would he kill his own boss? If you knew what they were going to do to that 4-year-old, you'd know that he will. Now, using that as an example, think about how many other people work for Lila Ambrose. Think about how many potential cracks in her armor are waiting to be opened up. The piranha solution starts with the parts that nobody has bothered to protect, and that's how they get inside. After what happened in Las Vegas, we have more faithful followers than ever. We vastly outnumber you. Thanks to Victoria, we know who all of you are, but you don't know who we are. When Tana stopped talking, the silence was so heavy that it hummed like a fallen power line. In the next building, Sadie was beside herself. She was on the phone with Mona, pulling all the personnel records for every guard on site. They needed to locate every potential shooter, anyone who had kids, and have Cordelia pull them immediately. But Matthias didn't know that. All he knew is that his monstrous daughter was staring a hole through him. "Now please," she said, "can we talk privately? They have an offer for you. It's very important." Matthias had been waiting for this. He picked up the leather satchel from under his chair. Inside it was a series of small tins and jars that contained herbs, leaves, tinctures, and paints. It was a travel kit with all the essential tools that the Cray family had been using for centuries to allow them to dreamwalk. "Okay," he said. "Let's talk." Matthias stripped down to his tidy whiteies and sat cross-legged on the floor in front of the cell door. Tanis sat across from him. She watched silently as he unscrewed the jars, opened the tins, and withdrew the sacred ingredients. He sparked a small bundle of twigs and then covered it with a healthy sprinkling of herbs. The entire Quonset hut filled with a faint but peculiar smoke. He dumped some small, bitter leaves into his palm and ate them. Normally, he preferred to brew them into a tea, but there wasn't time for that. The remote control sat just behind him, well out of her reach. "Are you ready?" he asked. "I'm already there waiting for you," she said. He closed his eyes and steadied his breath. Matthias reached inside himself and drifted away. This was not the leaves, nor the peculiar smoke. These were both very helpful to ease the transition between the waking world and the dreaming. But they did not render Matthias unconscious. He had decades of experience with his sleeping spirit, so he could stay awake for days on end, or he could close his eyes and fall asleep within seconds, which is all it took. When he opened his eyes, he was back at home, the family home on the res. Tanis was sitting on the living room couch, leaned over the coffee table, scribbling something down in a notebook. She looked to be about 13. Tanis, plain and tall, skinny legs and all, wearing her mom's old reading glasses on the tip of her nose. Matthias kept his breathing even. He touched a wall to steady himself. And while it looked like home, it felt different. The smooth eggshell white wall was damp and coarse to the touch, which helped ground him to where he really was. "What are you drawing, Tanny?" She held up a page with a diagram on it. "It's called Cell 6, and they say it's haunted. I'm going to explore it. I'm going to be the one who solves the mystery." Tana stood up. She pushed her glasses up the bridge of her nose. Her eyes were normal. Her mother's eyes. No longer ghastly, grisly green. "You can help me," she said. "They said they will let me go." "I don't believe you. I can't believe anything you say. These demons, they don't make concessions. They don't bargain. After Las Vegas, Pop, everything is growing so fast. They want a few major obstacles out of the way to speed up the process." "Obstacles like me or like Lila?" "You and Oregon are the obstacles. You stand between her and them, Pop. She's helpless without you. if you were to go away, if you could convince Oregon to give up the fight and go home, they said, I can come with you. Matthias went to the window and threw back the blackout curtain. He looked out upon the end of days. His humble family home was sitting in the woods at the edge of the Oregon orchards, under a bleak gray sky, as empty as the great void itself, marred only by the crooked rock spire pointing up. There were figures in the trees, the ghastly ones watching on. They stood in a loose cordon, several feet apart, encircling the house. Festering John, the baby doll, the woman with the split mouth, the butterfly woman, the skin weaver, the ravenous one, the bickering butchers, faceless, and more, and more, and on, stretching into the fuzzy darkness. Now Matthias was the one trapped in a cell, surrounded by a fence. He turned back to Tanis. So the slug is just going to come out of your head? No. I don't believe you. I don't believe that would ever happen. Tanis stepped forward, now a foot taller and fuller around the face. This was Tanis the last time Matthias had seen her. She was even wearing the same clothes. Listen, Pop. Since Martin arrived, things have been so different. The hand collector has ideas, new ways of doing things. It's so much easier if you would just leave, and then they don't have to fight you. They fear Oregon. Yes, but he fears them, too. And so do you. The whole world fears them more than ever. Now Tanis looked exactly as she did in her lonesome cell, missing those little pieces, covered with deep, ugly scars. When you're here on the island, you can't die. It's all a dream, you see. Awake or asleep, they can take me apart and put me back together again. The wounds that I keep, the ones you see, those are made on our side. Over there, the flesh can flow like water. I've had my guts taken out, loop by loop. And I couldn't die, but I could feel every moment of it. The things they did to me, Pop. Her lips tore open at the seams, bloody zigzags that ripped open her cheeks. And now her hands were severed, her eyes stuffed into her mouth. Her clothing fell to shreds, and so did the skin beneath. You don't understand the offer. You don't understand the piranha solution. They go through you to get to Lila. They go through your people to get to you. And they are not going to start with you, Matthias. They won't start with Oregon. You come later. First, there's your woman, Goyen, and Carly, and Flynn, and Carly's kids, Mark and Danielle, and their children. Everyone that you've ever cared about will be defiled and brought low until you break. Until Oregon breaks. All of the torture Tanis Kray had endured on the island was replaying in fast forward. An eternity of pain in a few seconds. And now she stood in a pool of her own blood, her body stripped to bone and sinew. They will keep breaking little pieces until there is nothing left. And it starts with your family. Teenage Tanis was back now. She scooched up her glasses. So it's up to you, Pop. Please, do the right thing. He squeezed his eyes shut, blinking out weighty tears. I can't. You have to. I can't. Do it for me, Daddy. Please? Wake up. Wake up. Wake up! As adept as Matthias was at falling asleep, he was equally so with waking up. He could enter and leave the dream world as he wished, regardless of what terrors that faced him. Now he was back on the floor, cross-legged, facing his waking daughter through the bars of her cell. He reached behind and picked up the remote control. "Everything I said was true," she pleaded. "I can't say that they're going to leave us alone, and I don't believe they will let me go. But if you push that button, Pop, they're going to kill everyone you know, and worse. Please, take a chance. It's not too late." From outside the hut, a single gunshot rang out. Oh no. Maybe it is too late. More shots came as a sniper opened up on his comrades and the others returned fire. It was chaos. Matthias pointed the remote at the device on top of the cage. "If you do that, you're going to regret it," she warned. "Tanis, my sweet, if you're still in there, I'm sorry." He pressed the button. But instead of the device triggering and melting the emissary curled up in Tanis's brain tissue, the cage door buzzed and popped open. Then the lights went out. It was all shadows and streaks now. The metal hinges of the cage squealed as the door opened, and his daughter ran on all fours towards him. Matthias would have loved to bounce to his feet, but he was in his 50s and that shit was simply not possible. By the time he had his legs under him, his daughter was right on top of him. Thankfully, he had his other set of skills to fall back on, quite literally. He had such a size advantage that he was able to grab Tanis around the waist and, as he fell flat on his back, toss her over his head. In the wrestling biz, it's called a release belly-to-belly suplex. Matthias landed on his back, arms out. Tanis came down on her head and shoulder and bounced off the curved wall. He rolled over, pushed up, slowly got to his feet. There were more gunshots from all around him now, and a far more disturbing sound that was coming from the front room. Matthias went to the door and threw it open. He heard Tanis moving nearby, trying to get back up. But what he saw stopped him cold. Looking into the front room, what he saw was so stunning, so sickening, so utterly demoralizing, that for just half a second, he forgot about everything else. "Oh God, no," he whispered. Manny Cortez was sprawled out on the floor, desperately clutching at his neck, but he could not stop the torrents of hot blood that gushed, sprayed, and splattered. His boot heels kicked against the floor. He wheezed and spat plumes of red mist. He reached up for his partner, Oregon, who stood over him with a red knife in his hand and ghastly green in his eyes. Tanis attacked Matthias from behind, jumping on his back and clawing at his face. He stumbled and put his hand against the wall to stay upright. The wall, which looked like smooth metal, but it felt damp and coarse, which allowed him to orient himself to realize where he really was. Matthias was sitting cross-legged in front of the cage door, his daughter smiling at him maniacally from the other side. There had been no gunshots, no murders. She laughed at him. "Do you see what we can..." He snatched up the remote and pressed the button. The device on top of the cage activated silently. Matthias felt nothing, so he tapped the remote again against the floor. Then Tanis retched. She squealed. She grabbed her face with both mangled hands. The slug inside her liquefied, and bubbling green-black goo oozed from her ears and from the corners of her eyes. "I'm so sorry I couldn't save you, Tanny. I love you." He sat with her for a moment, watching, making sure that it wasn't just another trick. The door to the front room opened. Manny and Oregon both entered, solemn. Neither man spoke. Matthias said to them, "Get Lila. There's some shit we need to discuss." Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. You can find the show on social media. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or contact us directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com. A special thanks go out to Aaron, Andy, Catherine, Eric, Brett, and all the other great supporters we have on Patreon. We just wrapped up the knife giveaway. Coming soon, the show will be doing a small print run of a book version of Bedtime Stories for Weird Kids. Join Patreon, get a free copy of that book, as well as access to dozens of videos and over 20 original unreleased episodes you can't hear anywhere else. You don't know the whole story if you don't have Patreon. The episode was edited and produced by Jeff Davidson, and it featured the music Indian Landmark by Messages, Primal Shaman by Alex Mason, Dickel's Dream by Dave Schuford, Margot Bianca, and Pigeons, Abyssal Tides Collapse Ashore by Diogenes in Hell, Awake in Dreams by Birds of Paradise, Through the Shadow Realms by Psycore, War by Harvey Milk, probably not that Harvey Milk, and, as always, Chelsea Oxendine with the theme music.